For Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Ari Snyder with the news on This Day in Maine, Friday, June 29th, 2025. The Office of the Chief Medical Examiner has issued the cause of death for Tim Keterling, the second of two hikers who perished on Mount Katahdin earlier this month. Carol Bousquet has more.
The medical examiner has determined that Keterling died of complications of hypothermia, and the manner of death was accidental. Keterling, 58, and his 28-year-old daughter Esther set out to climb Katahdin on Sunday, June 1st. When their car was found in the Able day-use parking lot Monday, a search was organized. Wardens and rangers found Tim Keterling's body near the summit on Tuesday, June 3rd. Esther Keterling's body was found a day later in a boulder area between two trails. Officials say she died of blunt force injuries that she sustained when she slid down the boulder field. Weather conditions that day indicate the summit had snow, sleet, and below freezing wind chills. The father and daughter were from Ulster Park, New York. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Carol Bousquet.
Governor Janet Mills is expressing, quote, deep concern about the potential impacts of the budget reconciliation bill now pending in Congress. Kevin Miller reports.
Mills wrote in a letter to Maine's congressional delegation that the budget bill could have, quote, profoundly harmful consequences for the state and its people. Mills cites an independent study suggesting that Maine could lose $4.5 billion in federal Medicaid funds over the next decade. She predicts tens of thousands of Mainers could lose access to MaineCare, the state's Medicaid program, and financially strapped rural hospitals could be at higher risk of closure. She also says the state will be unable to absorb the estimated $60 million it would cost to offer a food assistance program that serves 175,000 residents. And she warned that proposals to repeal tax credits and federal funding would undermine the growing renewable energy industry in Maine and derail efforts to transition more homes away from heating oil. The Republican-controlled House passed the reconciliation bill in May. The Senate is working on its version now. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Kevin Miller.
Late in the session, state lawmakers approved $4.5 million in one-time funding for Maine's homeless shelters. Shelter operators say the funds will provide a lifeline after the loss of pandemic-era grants that has left many of them struggling to stay afloat. Carrie Bradstreet is the executive director of Homeless Services Aroostook, which runs two shelters in Presque Isle that faced a $200,000 budget shortfall.
It's a breath of fresh air because we can breathe and we can move forward from here, but we're going to be having to hit the ground running again in the fall.
Bradstreet says shelter operators have been advocating for a permanent increase to the state's shelter bed reimbursement rate of about $7 a night. The rate hasn't been adjusted in nearly a decade. A recent Maine housing study finds that on average, shelter beds cost about $100 a night to operate. As expected, Maine basketball phenom Cooper Flagg of Newport was the first pick in last night's NBA draft, broadcast live on ABC.
As 18-year-old Cooper Flagg becomes the second youngest teenager to be drafted number one overall behind only LeBron James.
Flagg is coming off a single season at Duke in which he led the Blue Devils in points, rebounds, assists, steals, and blocks. He's expected to become a franchise player with the Dallas Mavericks. Amazon is building its first warehouse in northern Maine. The new delivery station in Caribou is part of the online retailing giant's $4 billion effort announced in April to expand services, speed up delivery, and create jobs in rural areas, although it's not clear yet how many. Nora Sachs has more.
According to Caribou City Manager Penny Thompson, the project, which involves a private nonprofit and a local developer, has been in the works but under wraps for many months.
We don't even say the word Amazon out loud in our office. We always refer to this as Project Moose.
But now that the project has started showing up on Google Earth, Thompson is sharing the news.
People are recognizing that Caribou has a great location to serve northern Maine. We have an educated workforce. The city is very willing to work with businesses to be able to bring these jobs and services to central Aroostook County.
In a written statement, an Amazon spokesperson said the company is close to completing construction on the more than 13,000 square foot structure. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Nora Sachs.
The state Supreme Court has finalized new rules for discipline proceedings involving their own. The new rules will now be applied to the case of Supreme Court Justice Catherine Connors, who faces possible discipline for failing to recuse herself in two foreclosure cases. Until now, complaints against justices were investigated by the Committee on Judicial Conduct and decided by the law court. Going forward, a panel of Superior Court justices and district court judges will rule on complaints against Supreme Court justices. A spokesperson for the Maine Judicial Branch says the Connors case, which has been on hold, will now proceed under the new rules. The United Way estimates that 4 in every 10 Maine families are financially insecure. Most of them live above the federal poverty level and have jobs, but are still unable to afford basic needs. A new social service collective in Kittery, which brings together a dozen programs under one roof, has been helping a growing number of families in need for the past 6 months, but looming federal cuts have advocates sounding the alarm. Carol Bousquet reports.
At the Footprints Food Pantry in Kittery, clients can take as much food as they like. Since it opened in January, Footprints has helped more than 250 new households put dinner on the table.
And what we're seeing is individuals coming from further and further geographic distances to get to us. And part of that, I think, is because of our ability to provide huge amounts of food.
Director Megan Shapiro-Ross says Footprints has been able to sustain its operations at a time when other food pantries in the region are losing their federal supports. Shapiro-Ross says 80% of her pantry's income stream comes from donations. And while cash gifts are slowing due to concerns about the economy, in-kind donations from school groups, churches, Rotary clubs, and residents are still filling shelves at the market.
I feel like the power of all of us together is really what's moving the needle. And I think with the current culture and climate right now, the power of community is what's going to allow us all to survive.
But the U.S. Senate is considering deep cuts to Medicaid, about $600 billion, and more than $200 billion to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, which advocates say will drive more families to seek local food assistance. Footprints is just one of the social service programs housed at Mainspring, a resource hub that offers one-stop shopping for help, not just with food, but also with clothing and even housing. And some are already feeling the pinch of declining government support.
Impacts that the federal cuts are having on housing development is pretty profound.
Emily Flinkman is executive director of Fairtide, a nonprofit that develops affordable housing. She says the supportive housing program is funding 2 apartment projects with a total of 18 units, but that money has now been exhausted.
I'm not sure that we're going to be able to have another project in the pipeline. And our intention really was to be able to have at least one project that we're opening every year or so.
Flinkman says since February, Mainspring has helped more than 200 people connect with a dozen programs and services offered here. People like 53-year-old Drew Kehoe, who has been in recovery for substance use disorder off and on for 40 years, a path that landed him in jail several times.
There's a lot of hope and help coming out of here, and I just want to be part of it in any way possible.
Kehoe says within a month of coming to Mainspring, he was in school learning how to become a recovery support specialist. He recently started working at a residential rehabilitation facility in Dover, New Hampshire.
Nervous but excited. I'm looking forward to it because, I mean, I'm as prepped as I could be.
Kehoe says he and his wife are on MaineCare, the state's Medicaid program, and are now applying for SNAP. He says he hopes the new job will get his family through any looming federal program cuts. Shapiro Ross says she's glad Mainspring opened when it did because it is sustaining so many families in the area. The goal, she says, is to stay the course, no matter what may lie ahead.
I'm not sure we can pivot in any direction. I think we just have to stay rooted in optimism and hope and continue doing what we do and trying to maintain our philosophy of abundance and offering the security to individuals who are accessing our services so that they're not feeling any more stress than they already are feeling from the federal cuts.
Some fear the situation could become dire this winter. The Trump administration wants to eliminate the low-income home energy assistance program, which 30,000 Mainers rely on to help heat their homes during the coldest months of the year. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Carol Bousquet.
This Sunday, personal collections from the estate of former record industry executive Herb Belkin will go up for auction in Thomaston. Belkin, who lived in Camden when he died in 2001, is remembered for his influential work at Capitol, Atlantic, and ABC Records in the 1970s. He's also considered a pioneer in the remastering of vinyl records by Frank Sinatra, Pink Floyd, and the Beatles that appeal to serious audiophiles. His own personal copies of these records are among the objects up for bid this weekend. Keith Shortall stopped by Thomaston Place Auction Galleries for a preview.
In addition to his personal collection of art, which includes pieces by Frank, Stella, David Hockney, and Alexander Calder, there's Herb Belkin's trove of gold and platinum record wall plaques for his work with such acts as Grand Funk Railroad, Jimmy Buffett, and Steely Dan.
Well, we're standing right in front of Herb Belkin's Platinum Record Award for Steely Dan's Asia, for selling more than a million copies at ABC Records.
There's also Belkin's 1980s reproduction of a Rockola jukebox.
But this version is fitted with a CD changer rather than a record changer. And all I need to do is punch in a four-digit number.
But Liz McLeod of Thomaston Place Auction Galleries says one of the stars of the show is a factory-sealed box set of the Beatles collection, remastered by Belkin's Mobile Fidelity Sound Lab in the early 1980s. Can Bobby love, love? What adds to the provenance of these records, McLeod says, is the fact that Belkin managed to convince Apple Records to release the studio masters and fly them across the Atlantic.
It's those tapes were shipped to the United States from London in special lead-lined cases in their own seats on an airplane. They had to be hand-carried and hand-delivered. You don't just ship the Beatles master tapes FedEx.
So is part of the value also in this history of Herb Belkin being able to talk the Beatles into allowing him to access their master recordings?
I would very much say exactly that. You had to have been a really powerful, larger-than-life personality to be able to enter into those negotiations, to get Paul McCartney to take your calls.
The same groundbreaking half-speed remastering process had been used earlier in 1979 to recreate Pink Floyd's iconic Dark Side of the Moon album. It was that project, McLeod says, that put Mobile Fidelity Sound Labs on the audiophile map.
And that became a very popular success, and that success opened the door to other releases of other prominent records. They revisited Dark Side of the Moon in the 80s with the ultra-high-quality record, UHQR series, with an even better grade of vinyl, a heavy, thick, substantial pressing that would not resonate the way that a thin pressing would. It was issued in a special, very high-quality container. It had very extensive liner notes and information, which you can't see in the copy we have because this is a sealed original.
This is how it came from the factory.
This is how it came from the factory.
And that's, of course, adding to the value. That's what collectors want. But in this case, they're not going to open it up and put it on their system. They're going to probably hold on to it.
Well, you'd be surprised. Some people might. A lot of audiophiles believe that the purpose of a record is to play it, not simply to put it on the shelf. And it's certainly the prerogative of the winning bidder to do as they please with it. If they'd like to put it in a safety deposit box and let it appreciate, that's certainly an option. But I think if they did open it up and put the record on their turntable, they would be overwhelmed by the quality of the reproduction.
Auctioneers at Thomaston Place Galleries say they have also discovered in Belkin's collection an added bonus that might just be the most important piece in the lot. A rare vinyl remastering of Journey's 1981 album Escape, which was pulled from release after just one day due to copyright issues with the record company. It's expected to fetch as much as $6,000. Just a small town girl, living in a lonely world. She took the midnight train going anywhere. The personal collections of music industry pioneer Herb Belkin will go up for auction on Sunday, June 29th at 11 a.m. All of the items are available for preview online or at Thomaston Place Auction Galleries. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Keith Shortall. A singer in a smoky room, a smell of wine and cheap perfume. For a smile they can share the night. It goes on and on and on and on.
None of the music used in the production of this story was taken from the recordings in the Belkin collection. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Coming up on Maine Calling at 11 tomorrow morning, a legislative update. I'm Ari Snyder. Thanks for listening.